We're losing hundreds, if not thousands, of languages a year because of enculturation right now.
Right.
And they lose their language, they lose their customs, they very quickly adapt to whoever has the new stuff, because they want the new stuff. It appears that there is a greater form of that that's taking place on a cosmic level that we could call, in Star Trek, like the Prime Directive, in which there are, in fact, many, many human civilizations out there. And the surprising part is that there are many of them that look almost indistinguishable from us. There are people, for example, one type looks like somebody from the Polynesian Islands. But these people, you tell them because they all wear a certain type of uniform. Most of the people that have achieved space travel have intelligent nanotech clothing that's made of a series of little nanotech robots that all kind of are holding hands electronically. So they clean your body and they protect you as you go through transdimensional portals. And the clothing also could react. So like if somebody tried to shoot you with a gun, it would intelligently tighten up that area to repel the bullet. So it's like the perfect bulletproof vest. So these people have some very, very advanced technology. And probably the biggest, most embarrassing secret that is the hardest for people to understand is that our governments, some governments on Earth, have never stopped being in contact with these people. And I mean never stopped, meaning they've had stargates on Earth for at least 10 or 11,000 years. They've never gone away. We know, for example, this is from very high-level sources, that the last 100 years of American presidents have all had in-person human extraterrestrial contact. So it does not start with Roswell. It starts at the beginning of the 20th century. They all had these people show up in their office. And by these people, I mean people who look human. Some of them look like they could be Native Americans. Some of them look like they could be Asians. Some of them look like they could be Scandinavian. Some of them look like, as I said, people from the Polynesian Islands. But the one thing that is an interesting fact, getting back to this question, is that every person I've spoken to who's actually met these humans, out of all the different types that they've seen, not one of the humans that have visited us from other planets look like Aborigines or blacks. And Aborigines and black people actually are more genetically different than anybody else on Earth in terms of their DNA. There's like a spectrum where blacks would be all the way on one side and Aborigines would be all the way on the other side, and everybody else in between is more genetically similar. But I was told from some insiders, for example, that the reason why most people on Earth get sunburns is that we didn't naturally evolve here. We were put here. And this planet isn't really right for us in terms of the climate and the intensity of the sun. You can get a lot of different types of solar radiation depending on what planet you're on. And most people, that would include Caucasians and Asians and so forth, we're not really built to be on this planet, per se. So we get sunburns and we have some other symptoms and side effects. A lot of us get back problems. And part of the reason why we have such a problem with our back is that the gravity on this planet is a little bit off for us. It's a little bit too strong.
That's interesting. And also the whole vitamin D,
yep,
you know, aspect of, you know, why it is necessary for some of us and not all of us, but it all involves the sun. You know, that's...
Yep. Skin problems is another one. Baldness,
yep,
is another one.
Yep.
Circumcision was originally something that we started on Earth because the extraterrestrial humans that visited us did not have a foreskin, and we did. We wanted to emulate what they looked like. There's also a variety of cultures that started to bind the heads of their children because these ETs had these elongated skulls and they wanted their kids to look like that.
Right. Oh, is that you? That's you?
That's my phone. I'm going to turn the ringer off. Sorry about that.
That's Radio 101, David. Yeah. Oh. I want to get back to a couple of things really quick before I let this get
so
away.
Just to
from
button that question, because somebody might be really concerned about this, I'll just say that as far as we can tell, black people are actually what the Earth would have made on its own. Now, bear in mind, though, that everybody is a hybrid, because if you go far enough back, everybody was tampered with by the Anunnaki, who mixed their own genetics with the people that were already on Earth. And that's like going back now 500,000 years ago. So we all have extraterrestrial DNA. There is no totally purebred human. But it does appear that the blacks and aborigines are much older and more native to Earth than any other species or any other type of human race that we see. That's what we've seen, because I know like probably 7 or 8 people that have interacted with multiple types of these humans, and not one of them has ever met anybody who looks black, ever.
Well, you know, I've never heard the description. You know, this is funny. With everything that is going down in Los Angeles today, I don't even want to mention, you know, anything like it's like great. It's such a touchy subject.
Oh, yeah.
And I declined to mention it during the opening of the show. And, of course, I'm referencing the Clippers and the fabulous Donald Sterling idiot. But it's a touchy subject.
For
and,
sure.
And you would think with the maturity of us humans, us Earthlings, that at some point we move on and above and get past the, you know, this racial divide that is there. It's uncomfortable for everybody. And I thought that we had like moved on. Here in LA, this is one thing that people need to understand. Different than any other place probably on planet Earth. Even more so probably than New York City. In that here in LA, everybody just gets along. Because there are no minorities. It's all a majority here. And no matter what street you walk down, no matter what city you go to here in LA, everybody just gets along. Whatever the media will say, that's different. As a citizen of Los Angeles, like you are and myself, we know you if you go down Third Street Promenade in Santa Monica and you're white, you're the minority. Or if you go down, you know what I mean? It's just.
I think that's true, yeah.
Yeah,
I never really thought about it that way, but I guess that's true, yeah.
But you can't think about it that way. And that's my point. You know, it's just the way that it is. And for this stuff that has just popped up this week, for us in LA, that's why it's such a big deal, because we really don't deal with that. You know, we've moved on from it, and it's shocking to me that somebody like in his position is freaked out about what his friends say.
I mean, my father was rescued by a black man when he missed the bus when he lived in Boston, and he started to try to walk home through this really ghetto part of Boston. And this black man had pity on him and said, wow, this little white kid's not going to make it. And he rescued him and drove him home. And that created, in my father's mind, an incredibly positive association with black people, literally saving his life. And I think he actually appreciates black people even more than white people. So my father then really became obsessed with black music and blues. And then as the 60s rolled on, blues became the archetype of all rock and roll. And my father wrote about rock and roll, and I met all the rock bands. And so I also met a lot of very famous black artists, a lot of the famous black blues men, B.B. King. You know, my father wrote the book on Buddy Guy, the biography, and he's the inspiration for Jimi Hendrix.
Absolutely. Wow. Did he really?
Yeah. Yeah. So I grew up going backstage and meeting all these people, and I just wasn't raised to be racist at all. I had a friend who was black in school. He was the only black kid in school because I lived in kind of a white area, which most people in upstate New York do. You're either in a black town or a white town.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But, you know, I just never even understood racism. I had trouble understanding anything about it, and you got to imagine what it would be like for people who are not born on this planet but are still human. And they can monitor our internet, and they can monitor our television and radio and everything. Imagine how it looks to them when we can't even accept each other on Earth. And then let's say you got some people who have some differences from us. Maybe their teeth look different, or maybe they have purple irises, or maybe they have ridges inside the top of their mouth like the mouth of a cat, or they might have an extra finger on each hand, or they might be a lot shorter than we are, they might be taller than we are, they might have... We know that the humans that are out there, some of them have pastel-colored skin. There's,
well, exactly. It goes both
pink
ways.
Pink ones, yellow yes. ones, yes. orange ones, green ones, blue ones, every color you can think of.
Fat, skinny,
yeah.
male, female.
And some of them are quite disturbing to look at.
Totally.
Some of them that don't look like us.
Some look very alien.
Yeah.
When I have somebody question me about that exact subject, or it could be somebody over here for dinner or whatever, and they go, you know, but you know, you have grays and you have Nordics and you have reptilian, you know, why yep. are they all different? I said, look, man, think about planet Earth. You know, if somebody came here and saw, you know, somebody that was Asian and then saw somebody that was African American, and one was male and one was female and one had red hair and one had, you know, next thing you know, they would think that they're looking at two different species.
That's true.
You know, it's we can run the gamut of what we accept as humans.
Apparently, we have far more racial diversity on this planet than most inhabited worlds in our galaxy do.
If that's the only way to look at it. And so yep. you would have to, and also the question of spacecraft and UFOs. You know, why are they so different? Well, look at what we drive here.
Oh,
and
totally.
Look at what we fly here. You know, it's all over the map. Nothing, it's not everything is exactly the same, period.
There's so many different ways to achieve the same results, too. I know one guy who has 8 different ways of doing anti-gravity that he developed with the military-industrial complex. So there's all kinds of different ways to get there, and there's all kinds of different technologies that get you there, and there are some that would be considered more advanced and some that would be considered less advanced. And another kind of embarrassing reality is that within this what some call the breakaway civilization, they ignore a tremendous amount of ruins. They just don't even bother to look at it. There's, for example, we know there are hundreds of miles worth of building corridors, hallways in buildings on the moon, hundreds of miles worth of ruins that you can walk through that have technologies that pop on when you walk past them, and they all light up as you walk past them.
Where did you find out this type of information?
Whole dark side of the moon right now looks like a gigantic parking lot. It's loaded with ships coming and going. There are all kinds of ETs around us, and they're all basically holding off a little bit longer. It's probably only a few years left before we get brought into this galactic neighborhood. And we're in the waning days of that before that happens. But
have you been to, do you ever spend time on skywatchers.net?
I have not.
Okay. I believe that's what it's called. Man, it's, it's a couple of guys that have telescopes on the moon 24/7, right?
Yeah.
Always, and you can just go and just sit there long enough. If you spend enough time, something will pop up, and it's crazy. So I'm watching it today, and I think it was yesterday or a couple of days ago, this whole fleet of UFOs, and I'm talking about it was like 20, just
wow.
shot right across the moon. You could see the shadow on the moon, sir, and it was just like this crazy thing. Now, anybody can put a telescope up in the backyard and check this out, but what we do have now, which we didn't have 25 years ago, and you and I were talking about this earlier today, with the advent of the internet, now this stuff is broadcast to anybody all the time. Everything that they, you fill in the blanks, that they didn't want you to see, They can't stop that now. And you
let me share something interesting with you that I actually haven't said anywhere publicly before. There are so many UFOs that are actually operating around the Earth and in our atmosphere at all times that there are some areas over America where if you could see what was going on, it would be as busy as the 405, literally.
I made
highway in Los Angeles.
The big one. I made a comment on Rents.com years ago on one of his forums. And I made a comment, and the comment was this: look, if everything that was photographed today, was not of this Earth, with the amount of photographs that are going on, then we would have the 405 freeway bumper to bumper outside of planet Earth. So my feelings with that have changed a little bit in that. Yeah, I was wearing my skeptic hat back then because we would be seeing stuff getting here. But, you know, I think that they're not actually traveling here in a conventional means because there would be no way to travel here in a conventional means. They're folding space. It's some kind of parallel. Something's going on, whether it's a wormhole or I don't know how they're getting it done. But they are getting
it. There's wormholes all over the place. You know, we haven't really done any space travel, and the space travel, what little we have done, has been highly regulated and classified. But there are plenty of places that you can fly around where if you just fly into one area, you're going to pop into a Stargate. It doesn't matter. You will fall into the Stargate, and you will go through a portal, period, if you try to fly through that area. Nothing you can do about it.
Here's a quick... I just want to get back to this. This came in from Twitter. Do you or David believe the ancient... I'm only reading this because this is a bit different for a question, and I've never had this one thrown at me. Do you or David believe that ancient aliens could be time travelers going back with our modern technology?
That is definitely one type. But I think that the inherent limitation in most people's imagination is they have a totally difficult time embracing the bigness of the puzzle that we're looking at. There are probably, I've heard from one of the highest level sources who actually works within this breakaway civilization as a routine part of his work, that even if you go out 100 light years, you start getting a few dozen inhabited worlds. And by the time you go out 1,000 light years, you've got probably several hundred inhabited worlds. So almost everywhere that you see a star, you're going to see some kind of intelligent life in the planets that star has around it. Most stars have planets. Planets can hold life at a lot of different levels, too. And I want to tie back to something I was setting up before when I mentioned the 405 thing, which is the technology for them to become invisible to us. It's actually not called cloaking. It's actually called masking. And it's much, much easier to do than we think. So there are a tremendous number of ships operating around us that are masked that you can't see, unless you have like fifth generation infrared vision goggles. And if you start playing around with that stuff, then you'll start to see a lot of things, especially in certain areas. There are some places right now, so I've been told, where you would see what looks like a busy highway if you had the right infrared night vision specs and just aimed it at that area of the sky. But the problem is that is a certain layer of reality that is separated from us by an energy vibration, the way that the atoms actually vibrate. And apparently what's happening is that our whole planet is up-leveling to a level where masking isn't going to work anymore. And that's really what's going to – that's one of the main things that's going to collapse the whole UFO cover-up, is that our frequency is rising very quickly, and it's going to get to the point – so I've been told from very credible insiders, it's going to get to the point where they can't be kept hidden from us anymore. We're going to see them whether we want to or not. And I think one example of that that just happened recently was there was this soccer game in South America somewhere, and this ghost goes running through, this shadow ghost goes running through the stadium, running right through people in the stadium. Did you see that one?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. That's, to me, an example of that the layers are starting to blend, and stuff that used to be partitioned from us that we wouldn't see is now becoming visible. And it's going to get more and more that way. You're going to see more and more UFO sightings. More and more stuff is going to become visible. And they're considering it a real problem, like in our government, because technology that used to work just fine isn't working anymore.
In what regard? What do you mean?
Masking. They can't mask. Like any C-130 ship, which is like an airplane they use to transport military hardware.
Right.
Any of the stealth stuff, any of it, they have masking that can do any conventional craft that's out there. And it used to work really well. You could fly it, and if people don't hear it, then they're not going to see anything. The light just bends around the object.
I got you.
The problem now is that that stuff isn't necessarily going to work anymore. And it's the same with the UFOs, whether it's the stuff that we built or the stuff that others are using.
When we on that subject, when you talk about bad, good, are we even prepared? If they come here with bad intentions, do we have a hope and a prayer? I mean,
absolutely.
Okay.
You have to understand that that the good ETs vastly outnumber the bad ones, and the bad ones are only allowed to do what they are permitted to do. They wouldn't be able to do anything if it wasn't for this principle of karma, in which if we create negativity on Earth, then a certain degree of negativity must be permitted to occur. But believe me, there's been a quarantine around this planet for quite some time. There's these... it's actually done through these micro drones, these very tiny satellites that are high up in the upper atmosphere. And anything that tries to fly in through this quarantine, it just bounces off of it. So it's not easy for anybody to get into this planet to begin with unless they have special technology that allows them to get through this defense grid that was actually put in place a long, long time ago.
Who put the defense grid in, them or us?
There's a group of ETs that basically protect the planet. They've been called the Watchers, or they've been called the Guardians, or the Elders. But we are actually very tightly managed so that there is never going to be, for example, a planet-killing nuclear war. There's never going to be, for example, a worldwide virus pestilence thing that kills off a whole bunch of people in the hundreds of millions. All this kind of what I call fear porn stuff that people keep getting so worked up about,
right?
None of it's ever going to happen. You're not going to see an asteroid crash into the Earth and kill everybody. You're not going to see Yellowstone caldera blow up and wipe us out. There's a whole lot of work being done, much more than we realize, to stop an invasion of ETs, to stop any of that type of stuff from actually taking place.
When,
and that's whether our own guys try to do it to us or whether that's somebody from the outside that tries to do it to us.
Somebody out there is going to want me to ask this question. Okay, that sounds great, David. Positive. I'm with you. But where are you getting this type of information? Where is this coming from?
There are people who work for the military-industrial complex, which there's a level of clearance that's sort of like the basic beginning where you start to hear this. It's called cosmic clearance or cosmic top secret. And that's 35 levels above the President of the United States in terms of the classification level. So the President is not at all knowledgeable about this. The last President who was kind of read in on everything was Eisenhower. And then as soon as Kennedy got in office, that's when they started to really seal it off from the president completely, because Eisenhower had a very negative reaction, whereas we now know through the work of Richard Dolan and his whistleblower, Eisenhower tried to order a military invasion of Area 51 and was rebuked by the military, but he did try to get that to happen because he felt that if these guys are going to build this base and not tell him about it, that they were therefore enemies of the state and needed to be a military invasion needed to be conducted to stop them. So the president is now kept in the dark, and what's happened is that the major branches of the military, first of all, Coast Guard really doesn't know anything. Sorry, guys. Army doesn't know very much. The two big branches that you're looking at that really have all the secrets are the Air Force and the Navy. And then there's an interesting history because, first of all, the Marines are part of the Navy. The Marines were a subdivision of the Navy originally because the naval ships would transport the Marines to a given war theater. The Navy is predominantly still run by the Rockefeller Alliance, which is the sort of the Western American side of the cabal. The Air Force, back in World War II, had to work with the British because they were in that war theater, whereas the Navy had their own ships. They didn't work with the British anywhere near as much. So the Air Force integrated with the British. And all these years later, what that means is that the Air Force is much more connected to the European side of the cabal, like the Rothschilds and all that kind of stuff. So you have essentially what's turned into two warring factions in the military, the Air Force being sort of the British Rothschild faction, the Navy being sort of the American Rockefeller faction. And they both have a vast, vast military-industrial complex in which there are a whole series of defense contractors that appear to be private independent corporations, but they actually are all subdivisions of the military, who then basically does no-bid contracts and pays themselves through these dummy companies to do their own work. So there is still a very active war going on, including UFOs that are owned by the Navy and the Air Force that are warring with each other, and sometimes they're actually shooting each other down because they're fighting over who's going to run this thing once they do disclosure.
There's one fascinating, you started to touch upon this right there. There's one fascinating thing when we're talking about rich families and what's going on with the military industrial complex. And it's this thought, and it's very complex and heavy, but for us normal people that drive to work every day and we go to work at whatever, you know, just normal, what we don't get is there are people that own military factories that make their money from going to war, and the stuff that they manufacture, they have no conscience about.
Yeah.
They hope that we go to war with their machines and go and kill so they can make more machines and make more money.
Right.
You know, it's a fascinating, when you look at the complexities of that and what is the implications of that, when you know, you may be just some guy that owns a chain of Subway shops. Okay. Your deal is to make sandwiches. Okay. We got to make more sandwiches. We need to make more money. We need to expand. And somebody has that exact same thought with destruction.
Yeah.
And it's a crazy thought.
You were awakened to the truth before 9/11, just like I was. And I recall before 9/11, a real desperation on behalf of the controlled mainstream media, the cabal, to try to get us concerned enough to justify large military expenditures. And I remember before 9/11, one of the things they kept pushing was the cyber threat. They kept saying that cyber terrorism was going to take place and that it was going to just completely destroy Western civilization. And they just couldn't get enough traction to justify, you know, okay, somebody wants to hack your computer, so we need to build a really big gun and aim it at them and shoot them.
Right. You know, they were going to poison the water supply with cyber attacks. Yeah, and it just, you're right, though. And they were trying to figure out they. I love saying they. But they're grasping at different types of straws with fear attached. You know, which one do we get? You know, let's throw a bunch of this out there. And like you said, one of it's going to get traction, and we'll grab onto that fear, whatever.